And welcome to the November 3rd edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. In the studios at KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have Mac guru Joel Brovelite. Hey, Joel.
Hey.
Good day, sir. We also have from Exigent, Amos Aesop is here. Hey, Amos.
Hey, how you doing?
It's been a while.
I was just telling Kara that. It's been a while.
Yeah, we have probably a lot of catching up to do, I would assume.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in just a couple of seconds here. Folks listening, you ask the questions. We will provide the answers. If you're a Facebook aficionado, that page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You may post your comments and questions there. Don't be shy. Twitter users can send questions to me at KentSDPB. And, of course, the mailing address inthemoment@sdpb.org. You happen to have your mobile device in front of you right now. You're perhaps texting a friend about lunch. You can send us a text, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Amos, what's been going on in your world? What's been melting down lately?
What's been melting down? Boy, you know, what can melt down? Because I'm pretty sure at some point in the last month and a half or so, it probably has. A lot of things. There's, you know, we've got a lot of customers, you know, making that leap from doing the on-prem thing to the cloud. And, well, the cloud is absolutely a enterprise-ready, business class, ready for prime time kind of environment. Each customer seems to bring along its own, you know, unique requirements and customs, things that they're accustomed to doing previously that mm-hmm. they'd like to continue. And sometimes that's a bad idea. It's maybe a little less secure in the cloud to do something in a certain way than it was to do it behind closed doors or behind a firewall in your own network. So, you know, we run into those issues, but we're able to work through most of them. Yeah, it's always interesting when we move new workloads to the cloud.
Is it a big difference between a company that say has personally identifiable information and companies that don't? So maybe it's just I don't want to say trade secrets or whatever, but just basic company communication and work between employees that isn't those social security numbers or birth dates and, you know, the things that we typically you want to think are really need to be on hardened networks and keep away from people. Is it a big difference when going to the cloud, meshing those services?
You know, I think with the frequent news stories about places that have been hacked, especially the Equifax issue that happened, you know, that really puts a little bit of fear, uncertainty, and doubt into the back of the minds of the people who are giving the yes or no to move that stuff to the cloud. And specific to your question, I've been doing quite a bit of work with bank type information recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as banks get accustomed to, are a little more comfortable with, and start moving some of their stuff to the cloud, they are looking for what are the extra steps we can take to mitigate anything that might come along. How do we not become Equifax? How are we not be on the front page of the news tomorrow? And so, yeah, that the PII, the PHI, the, you know, anything HIPAA, anything credit card related, anything Social Security, banking. There's always a little paranoia there, which is good. We encourage that paranoia. It's what keeps you. You know, safer than maybe your competitors.
And you mentioned Equifax, and that was a really unfortunate thing that happened, and they'd been warned, right?
Well, you say unfortunate, I say silly, because they had absolutely all kinds of opportunity to fix that. You know, it's an old exploit. They were told about it. It's one of those things, you know, you would think a company of that size with the type of information that they hold, that there would be nobody who had more ambitious and more talented security people on staff who did, you know, nothing but all of the right things. And then it turns out they don't. So it was surprising to me, that's for sure.
Huh. Speaking of old exploits and things, we spoke, you weren't on the last show, but the folks that were, we spoke a little bit about the routers vulnerability. And was that the Reaper thing? I might be
crack.
I might be
the,
oh, crack. Yeah, that's right. Yep. I'm getting my, you know, they're calling these things such funny little names now, and so I get the Reapers and the cracks and the other things all mixed up. But the WPA2 vulnerability that's out there that we told everybody about, and we hope that they all went and and checked their routers, because some of the routers will sort of auto update, right, and some won't.
Some will, some won't. You know, the and I don't know how much you got into it last time, so I don't want to cover a lot. But you know, it's a serious vulnerability. WPA2 has long been thought of as this is where you go to be standard, to be safe, to be secure. And now there's been found a vulnerability in it. That being said, kind of hard for the average person who's looking to attack someone to go after someone specific. They got to be, you know, within your proximity, right? They've got to be close to you. Somebody from China is not going to hack somebody in California. They just aren't close enough. And as those, as this story developed and it became a big deal, manufacturers really took notice. The big thing is that unless your device has an update for it, there's not a lot you can do. So, you know, there's no no need to panic and shut all your devices off, you know, if you don't have the update. But do make sure to check. If you do have an update now, update it maybe in a month. If you don't have it now, update it then. Just watch for that. I've got a lot of friends who actually choose to not do some of the updates on their phones for whatever reason. This is a bad time to not choose to do that update. Watch for it. Know that it's out there, and you should be looking for the updates, but there's otherwise not a lot you can do.
Okay. So Reaper, of course, is the botnet that is hanging out there, posing a threat. it's significantly larger than some in the previous in the past, and it's got some unusual behaviors that are, you know, that can really be a problem or problematic. Or what are we watching for on Reaper with deny, you know, those DDoS attacks and things like that? Is there anything really to prepare for on that, or is it waiting to happen?
So one thing that I've done in the past, I suppose it's been in the past month, is for a couple of friends that have gone out and acquired the IoT type devices, or the Internet of Things, and these would be devices that are Wi-Fi connected, that, you know, maybe like an Amazon device or a camera or something else that has internet connectivity but isn't really a computer or a laptop or a tablet, that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
Is taking those devices and putting them on their own wireless network. If you have a semi-modern router at home, wireless router, wireless access point even, generally you can create multiple SSIDs or multiple wireless networks. Take those devices and put them on their own network so that if something were to happen with those devices, a vulnerability comes out with a particular camera and it gets hacked, that it's limited to that network and doesn't get into your home network. The other thing, too, is, and this is a tough one, is keeping up with updates on all those devices, because it's just difficult to think of and remember. If any of those devices have the ability to do auto updates, make sure you enable that functionality. And hopefully Reaper isn't as big a deal as they say it might be.
Yeah, that it really seems like it's going to possess the ability to target a lot of a lot of the things.
One of the things I've been hearing lately, a saying that I heard that I thought was good, is the S in IoT stands for security. There
now,
is no S.
Now, I kind of right. Got that. Now, are you suggesting that Kent have a separate network at home for my things, and then a separate network for my humans?
So let me give you my example. I've got three wireless networks at home. One is the one that I use for my tablets, laptops, and one particular desktop that has a connection. I've got a second one that guests can come over and use, and then I've got a third one, which I literally labeled IoT, and that's where I put my cameras, my Nest thermostat, my Alexas, those sorts of things. Those devices that don't need access to your internal network. And if something breaks out, if something gets compromised, it's limited to that network, and you know, you can't really get in and get to my family pictures or to my finance stuff, my banking stuff, because that network is completely segregated. So that's it's an option. It obviously there's some administrative overhead there to set that up.
Sure.
And sometimes it's difficult because sometimes those IoT of things need access to things that are on your network. So, for instance, if you've got a wireless speaker system, that would be an option. A Chromecast, absolutely. But if you put it on a separate network, now you can't control it from your laptop, from your desk, or from your couch, right? Because they can't talk together. So, do it where you can, where it makes sense, where it can't, then just make sure to keep up on your updates.
I guess you're just kind of, you're mitigating that risk a little bit. So help Kent out here. If I were to set up multiple networks at home, I've got a cable modem, or, you know, other folks may have another source of internet. Do I put a router into a router then? Or is there software in my router that's going to allow me to split networks on things? I guess is the question. Or how did you do it? Do you have separate routers for those three things?
No. So most of the routers that you buy at the big box stores anymore will have a built-in guest network.
Okay. I know that. Okay.
That you can create. Yep. To get a third network, generally you probably have to step up a level in router and wireless functionality. Being the business I'm in, I have a little. A step up or two.
Okay.
But those are definitely available. You can certainly purchase them at your local Best Buy or Amazon or wherever you happen to buy your electronics. They're available that will do multiple wireless networks. And, there's a little extra expense, obviously, to them. But you probably won't find them in the $50 category. But if you look around, they're available.
If I had an extra router laying around, can I plug it into my other router, and does that defeat the purpose of doing this?
So the answer to that one is it depends, right?
Okay.
So if you've got an extra router, depending on what your ISP's functionality or what their requirements are, you know, it's possible that you could get a switch. So you can plug in two routers to your ISP. Maybe they allow that, maybe they don't. Your mileage may vary on that one. If you've got an extra wireless router, then use one for your IoT and one for your home stuff. I suppose you could plug a router into a router. That does start to bring along some concerns about whether or not you're actually segregating anything or not. But provided it's configured correctly, I suppose that could work as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. I just see my wife asking me this weekend, Ken, what are you doing? I'm saying I'm redesigning my network.
Yeah.
But
you know, with all the things out there, and I was looking at a refrigerator the other day. I just not actually to purchase, just because I was interested in the technology. But you know, that's Wi-Fi enabled, and you can look in your refrigerator from your cell phone while you're at the grocery store, so that you can see if you've got milk or not.
And okay.
I thought that was, you know, so from those devices to the cameras to the vacuums. Your speaker systems, everything's becoming wireless. Your Chromecasts, all of that stuff. The more of it you have, the more likely you are to have something that's going to have a vulnerability and be cracked. And so, whatever you can do to mitigate that or try to keep it secure is great.
I can imagine a few years ago we were talking about cracks in Joel's light bulbs. We were talking about cracks in Joel's light bulbs, not actually hacking them, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah, that actually, I just picked up my first starter set of the Philips Hue. Haven't had a chance to do anything with it yet. There's another great example. And you've got, what, like 40 or 50 light bulbs in your house?
Yeah, at least. Yeah. Wow. And basically, every light in my house is Philips, which I have to say, you know, I started, I don't know, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, whenever the first ones came out, and I have yet to replace one.
Hmm.
So they last a good long time, I've noticed. And actually, a couple years ago, I had a problem with one that it kind of died. I called the company up, and they just sent a new one out. Like, really, no questions asked. They're like, okay, yeah, no problem.
You like to see that kind of response from a
Yeah, I mean, it was still within the 2 years that I had purchased it at that point, but, you know, there was no hassle. They just kind of sent it out. So, and that was one out of, you know, got to be at least 60 or so in my house. Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Now, Philips has motion sensors that are actually pretty reasonable, around $25-$30 that you can place in rooms. So, kind of self-automates in that way. So they turn on when you walk in, which I know there's ways to do that with standard light bulbs, but being able to control them while you're gone and all that, just and motion detecting, just makes it really useful. I don't think I'd ever go back if I had to.
You know, and I don't know, Kent, if this, tell me if I'm getting ahead of myself here, but that makes me think of the new Amazon service that's coming up. I forget what it's called, the part where they can open your door and drop the stuff off inside.
Oh, yeah, key.
Yeah.
Key.
Am I jumping ahead here?
No.
Well, not really. We do have to take a quick break. And why don't we talk about that right on the flip side? We also have a question via text for Joel. But we do have to take a short break. Our text number, 956-STPB, that's 956-7372. If you have a question for us today, the email address is inthemoment@stpb.org or, of course, on Twitter, @KentSTPB. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio on SDPB. Gathered the experts today to talk tech and answer your questions. And all right, guys, we got a lot of tech to talk about this week. There seems to be a lot in the news and a lot of certainly a lot of new hardware and some software out this week. But want to again mention to folks our Twitter account @KentSDPB, not closed down by a rogue employee this morning. The email address is inthemoment@sdpb.org. And, of course, you can send us a text 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Amos, we were alluding to Key. And of course, that's the Amazon service announced on October 25th that lets delivery drivers enter your home. That sounds ominous, doesn't it?
It does. And Joel and I were just talking about it. You know, there's probably geographical areas where this makes sense and specific living situations. Maybe if you're in an apartment building that doesn't have a method for, you know, locking up your deliveries, or if you live in I think I said it was a keeping your stuff to challenge. Challenged area,
mm-hmm.
You know, where stuff gets stolen off the porches. I suppose it makes sense. I don't see myself ever using it, or really anybody I know, but it's certainly one of those things. I guess I thought of it because of the motion sensing that he was discussing, and having that activate the camera when the delivery driver drops that stuff off, so that you can watch it and view it. It's just an interesting technology, and I wonder if, with all of the effort they're putting in to develop this, because there's got to be back-end systems that need to have that money and development time put in, is this going to pay dividends for them? I don't know if the market is big enough in this section.
Well, just looking at the charts as far as they did some polling, and there's not a whole lot of Americans that are they're pretty wary about this, giving access to the home, and you know, it's all across all age groups. It's not good.
yeah.
But on the same token, I sit here at work. I get a text from Amazon saying we delivered your package of really great things, and I sit at work and go, you know, man, it's raining out right now, and I'd really like to go home and get my package off the front step before somebody else does.
Mm-hmm.
So two things. One, I'm soaking my new electronic gear in rain. And two, I'm wondering if just a random person that, you know, going through the neighborhood happens to see, you know, my shiny new object sitting there, and it's a temptation. I'm not saying that, you know, necessarily that my neighborhood's overrun with thieves or anything, but you know, on any given day, you just don't know.
There certainly is a problem that needs to be fixed. I think this might be a little overkill on it in a lot of situations, but you know, what's the alternative? I guess maybe Amazon provides some sort of device that you can bolt to your porch that they've got a key to get into that, so that you've got something, you know, some sort of lockbox that can't be removed as easily as a loose package. That might be a better intermediary step. You know, the idea that you can watch when the package delivery actually happens and see the person who's coming in your house, great idea. I think that, you know, makes things a little bit better. But you have to figure that that's going to fail occasionally. and then there's going to be what happens when it fails occasionally and what happens when it's found to have a vulnerability in it and they can force it to fail at a specific time. Or when, you know, Amazon Key gets hacked and now anybody can walk around and say, I've got a package to deliver to this house, and they can unlock that door, turn off that camera, because I'm assuming that if they hacked part of it, they can hack the camera part too. I mean, we're kind of stretching this out, but
yeah, I mean, I what I'd say about this is I would like to see data on how much harder it's going to be to break into somebody's house using these electronic means than it would be using standard deceptive means, like wearing the right clothes and just walking up and, you know, picking the lock and getting into somebody's house, and then there's no camera there. So I really don't see this. I mean, a bunch of stuff deals going to be made about how it's less safe than not doing it, but I would find that hard to believe, considering the technical know-how you'd probably have to actually get this done.
And then you'd have to know a house that has the service available.
For sure,
too,
yeah.
Right?
And how are you gonna know that? You know, again, using standard means, I imagine you could probably just scout out which ones it is. But then, you know, they could just break in at some point anyway. So, I mean, I think that's just a bunch of, you know, end of the world, sky is falling stuff, frankly.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how the adoption goes. And certainly, like you say, there might be instances where people are totally cool with this. And, it might be a solution to problems that they're having, and we'll have to see if and when it gets rolled out. I guess there's a special,
yeah. I mean, I think
about $250 to get in on the, you know, on the deal.
Like Amos says, I think there are going to be several areas of the country, and maybe even certain places around here where it might be very valuable. If you live in an apartment building, it's got a lot of people. I could see signing up for that. I would have no problem with. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I know my UPS driver, and you know, I'm pretty friendly with them. So,
well, you know, they say that at the beginning, it's not actually going to be UPS, FedEx. It's going to be actual Amazon.
Oh.
And so that's going to limit it for its release, too,
sure.
Right? But eventually, in order for it to scale well,
yeah, it'd have to.
It'd have to end up with UPS and FedEx, unless Amazon wants to take over that world too. I guess.
I think that they would if they could.
Okay. Well, we'd like to hear from, I guess, our listeners and see what they think. Facebook.com/TechRadio is a great place to interact with us 24 hours a day. We're always on there. Send us a text. It's 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. And, Joel, you got one. You got a text today. So say on an Apple, they have an Apple 6S. Is it possible to print a photo album instead of printing each photo separately? And I don't exactly know how to take that, but I'm gonna toss it to you and see if you can make sense of that.
Well, I'm just gonna guess it's an iPhone 6S.
Yes.
If they want to print their photos in an album, kind of sight unseen, just print everything. There's no good way to do that. Using, you know, the standard software. However, you could use a ton of other software, like I'm drawing a blank on those photo services.
Oh, like a Flickr,
Snapfish.
Yeah, Snapfish, and you know, yeah. those programs, those companies that will print your photos and make cards and all that. I'd find one of those. Likely, it's going to be cheaper than going to, you know, a Walmart or something and printing them. You'll have more options, and it should be pretty automatic. And
I've seen those. Those you can get some really good quality
photo books. Yeah. So I mean, that's what I would recommend. And those programs will have lots of options for you and be able to import all of your photos right from the photo app. So it should be really straightforward. We could probably throw something up on Facebook, I'm not a big user of those apps, but yeah, Snapfish and Shutterfly. Shutterfly. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yep, and even photo printing services as a part of like some of the bigger chain stores, like a Walmart or you know some of those, you can upload bulk photos and print them and have them shipped to you. Or you can go pick them up in an hour. It's not going to happen within the phone, but you can get there with a third party service.
Yeah, and there's going to be lots of options for you.
Yep.
I'll post the the best online photo sharing printing services of 2017, according to PC Magazine.
There you go.
Bam. Right. I should mention one I have used is Walgreens. I've used Walgreens. Their app isn't too bad, and you can select a whole bunch of them, hit print, and you can just go get the photos, or they have options for books and such as well.
Sure. Yep, just a quick comment from Ivor on our last discussion there. It says, what about if my dog doesn't recognize a delivery person and attacks them? obviously it's not gonna be great for all situations. And
I suppose they'll have to develop a policy for that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably, covered. They'll probably have thought of that. I imagine Amazon's not going to be like, oh, darn, we forgot about dogs. Exactly. That's not going to happen.
It'll only happen once or twice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Joel, you were supposed to be toting a new shiny object today.
And it didn't happen, unfortunately. Literally hitting refresh on my web page. It shows me where it's going to be. So I'm waiting for my iPhone 10 to show up. I imagine it'll be here soon. But I just didn't make it before the show.
Okay.
So I can't open it on the show, unfortunately.
We were hoping, that you could do a little unveil for us and talk about Face ID and how much you hate the notch.
What I have to say is the early reviews that I've seen are pretty much just like the Thor movie, all positive. We should talk about that notch that you're talking about. There's a little part of the screen, since the entire phone is a display, it doesn't have any buttons on it. There's a little kind of folder-shaped notch at the top where the cameras and other interactive, like light and such, and the lasers sit behind for the front-facing camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's all up there at the top. And when it's on, it's kind of standard home screen. It shows as kind of a black notch, as you describe it, cut out of there. I can't imagine it's going to be a big deal to most people. I think most people are probably just noticing it because it is noticeable. From what I hear, though, virtually every other app kind of just fades that out, so you don't even see it, so it just winds up being black. It's a thing.
So the top sections on the left and right of it, they just kind of take care of in software
and
make that just like a bar. Okay.
Exactly. You can make it whatever it is you want to make it.
One of the top themes in my phone's theme store thing recreates that.
So
if you'd like yours to look like an iPhone X.
Oh, why not? Absolutely.
Right. Oh, you got to be kidding.
What a great idea.
Must be a thing.
So are you on the Note 8, Amos?
I am, yeah.
Okay. What's... give me your impressions of that, because the three hot phones right now are obviously the iPhone, actually 8, and now the 10, but the Galaxy Note 8 and then the Google Pixel 2 XL are all the I guess all three within right around $850 too. But we've talked about prices on past shows. We don't need to recreate that. But what do you think? What's your impression on that Note now that the battery's not doing bad things, right?
Yeah. It's a thing. So here's the deal is that I've always been interested in the latest, greatest phones, but the leaps and bounds that they're making or they were making are now becoming hops and skips and maybe just shuffles at this point. And to spend that much money on these devices and not get some amazing tech to come with it, I'm losing my interest in this particular form factor of technology. It's I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't get the Note 8 again. I would have stayed with my S7, which I had because my S6 broke. No, because my Note 7 was the exploding phone.
Right. Yep.
And I got that one because my S6 broke. But I might be at the point where I'm just going to stick with this until there's something significant that comes out. It just doesn't interest me anymore.
What you're saying is there's got to be a feature or a killer thing that makes you move to the next
thing. I will tell you that I have started making use of, and this is a whole other topic, started making use of the different pay systems. So there's Apple Pay, there's Android Pay, there's Samsung Pay. And I've been using the Android Pay and the Samsung Pay with my Note 8. I like the Samsung Pay because it works both for the devices where you just, you know, set the phone on there and it has an NFC connection, but it also works on the devices that have a swipe only. So on those devices that normally you'd have to run your credit card through, the phone actually takes and runs a magnetic signal from the top to the bottom and simulates that swipe through. So virtually anywhere that takes a credit card, I've been able to use my phone, and it's crazy handy. It's super fast, I really like that functionality. But that was available in previous phones, so I don't think this phone is special just for that. But it is something I've been using lately, and it's been handy.
So what you're telling me, the terminal at the store doesn't have to be set up to take a pace? It's got a thing that does a thing?
So only for Samsung Pay right now, as far as I know. I've not tried Apple Pay. I know Android Pay doesn't support it.
Yeah, Apple Pay doesn't work that way.
Okay. But, yeah, if you've got a terminal that is swipe only, is not set up for NFC, Samsung Pay, and I don't know, it's some miracle pixie dust inside there is how they do it, is still able to simulate that magnetic swipe in that system, and you can still pay with your phone.
That seems like the clerks kind of look at you with cross eyes and say,
absolutely.
What did you just do to my cash register?
I've had two clerks who looked at me and said, no, we don't take that. And then it beeps and they're like, oh, okay, I guess I didn't know it did. But again, it's unique to that platform. So,
This is very interesting. I'm gonna check. Not that I haven't seen the adverts to use these services, because it's not a constant drumbeat, but every now and then it's like, hey, you should be doing this, or you should be using this pay system or that pay system. And Joel, on the Apple side, I hear good reviews. People are happy using it, and vendors or people are reporting that things are working well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a very minor learning curve when you first start using it, because, you know, of course you're like, is it going to work? Is it going to be a problem? I don't want to be stuck in line and you
look
know,
silly.
But once you kind of get the hang of it and more businesses are used to it, it's pretty smooth. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer that eventually devices like this are going to take over. We're not going to carry little plastic cards around. And regardless of what anybody says, as long as your phone has security, whether it's a thumbprint or Face ID, is way safer than a credit card, even a chip card, you know. So definitely I think that's the way things are going.
The way I got comfortable with it, because it does require you to know what part of the phone needs to touch and how long you need to put it there, is that I'm finding these devices are available on vending machines in hotels lately. Right. And so now you don't have anybody standing in line. You don't have a clerk who's watching you thinking you don't know what you're doing. And it gives you the ability in kind of a comfortable area to learn how that technology works, how long it takes, and make it as easy and quick as it would be to take that credit card out of your wallet.
I've got another task this weekend. I'm going to redesign my home network. And I'm going to try one of these pay systems. I've got a phone of each flavor, so I think I'll probably try the Samsung first. Any tips for me?
You know, I guess the one tip would be what I just mentioned, would be to go find a machine that is completely automated, like a vending machine, so that you've got time and comfort level. For mine, it requires a level of security. When I open up the app, it's got to do the iris scan thing. So you got to know that that's coming, and then you got to know that in my particular phone, it happens to be the lower third is what needs to touch. Just get comfortable with that, and then not only will you get comfortable with it, but you will have lots of diet soda to drink with you as well.
Jeez. Okay.
Because you're buying them.
So new network, pay system, and turn my clock back, right?
Oh, that's this weekend?
We fall back. Is that correct?
That's this weekend, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And change battery. Okay, so that's a whole
other
thing.
I'm glad I listened to the show.
Got to change batteries and smoke detectors. Okay.
Although it doesn't matter so much anymore if you're like me, you know, your clock is your phone, and your phone just does it automatically. So my brain doesn't need to work anymore for such things.
Well, yeah, there's still some of us that have clock radios and clocks.
What are
on,
that? What's that?
Yeah, I know, and clocks on
the radio
on your stove. Clock? You know, so I still have to do that. But yeah, it's nice getting the prompt on the phone. Hey, you're in a new time zone, or the clock's changed. Do you want to go ahead and change it and do all that? Quick question from Joe: are there any free or almost free apps that allow me to turn a PDF file, a picture or written document, into a Word document you can write on? So I guess the flip side of taking a Word doc and making it a PDF, taking a PDF and making it a Word.
So using the terminology write on, that would, I would assume he means edit, right? So,
yeah, sure.
Make changes to,
Yeah, because write on is a whole different thing than actually be able to edit the text that's in it.
Because that technology is called a printer.
Yeah.
Turns a PDF into something you can write on.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Or even just use a photo that you can then use in something. But yeah, that's a whole other deal. Of course, the non-free version would be to use the pro version of Adobe's PDF, Adobe Acrobat. That's the one they want you to. And even then, you're not going to be able to edit that text if the company did not want you to. There are ways around that, but
and there's
trickier than it seems.
There's several online converters. Just a quick Google brings up, I don't know, a dozen of them, PDF to doc, PDF online, PDF to Word. Free PDF convert. The thing that I found when I use a lot of those, though, is it does turn into a Word document in that it's a .doc extension, but it's an image that's embedded in the Word.
Or if it converts the text, the formatting goes all off, and it's just a... Yeah. So, yeah.
The best way is definitely the Adobe way. I have had... here's one thing I have had luck with, is if you can... if you have access to Microsoft OneNote... OneNote does some OCR, optical character recognition. So if you take that, PDF, you somehow get it to an image, which you can just save it as a TIFF file or whatever image format you want. Put it into Microsoft OneNote. It will OCR all of that text, and now you've got something editable. It makes you jump through some hoops, but it costs less than buying the Adobe software. Provided you've got access to OneNote, right?
Any other
OCR software.
We should say it depends on exactly what it is you want to do. If it's a form you want to fill out, that could be trouble even using Amos's method.
Right.
If it's just text you want to use, I think you got lots of options. And if you don't if the formatting doesn't matter, that's going
to
be
even
easier.
If you're just trying to plagiarize something that is in PDF, you're going to have to massage it in some way, shape, or form once it makes it to text.
Yeah. One of my biggest tech disappointments, I guess, this year has been trying to take a whole handful of written documents and turn them, OCR them, and get them into something I can edit them. And it was a horrible experience. Absolutely horrible. I ended up retyping everything in multiple pages because it just did so poor. It turned it into language that, I didn't even know what language it was, I guess. So
Wingdings.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been funnier if it was Wingdings, and I might have got a laugh out of it. But
well, that's interesting. That's painful. Interesting because OCR has gotten really, really, really good in the past couple of years.
I didn't find it. I did not find that to be the case.
Mm. Well, yeah. Anyway, what people should know about OCR is even if it fails, 1% of the time, that's going to be 3 or 4 mistakes on any given page of text. So depending on how important it is, that your method of retyping may actually still be the best method.
Like I said, we're just all hoping that it gets better, I guess, in the future. Guys, I wanted to talk about a couple of different things. I mentioned VMVPDs at the top of the show, and I didn't explain what that was, and we really didn't talk about that, but it's virtual multi-channel video programming distribution. So those are the things. Did you guys watch the World Series at all? And
I caught a couple.
See that the ad basically that was on your screen all the time for YouTube TV?
Yeah, I've seen the ads for YouTube TV, yes. I did not watch the World Series.
The clever part of the placement, the product placement for that was when they showed the picture of the batter, the little play button for YouTube was just kind of over their shoulder, and it was kind of perfectly centered in the screen. So it almost looked like you needed to reach out and hit the play button all the time to keep the game going. You know, if you were watching on a, you know, on a screen, not a big TV or whatever, it was like perfect product placement. But it highlighted the fact that there are more and more options out there on like the slings, and the DirecTV Now has the ability to you know, deliver, I want to use the word live television to different screens and displays and things, and now they're layering the YouTube TV on top of that. It's $30-$35 bucks a month, I think, and if you're in one of the bigger DMAs or the larger cities in the country, and unfortunately South Dakota is not one of them. In the top 50 markets, you're going to be able to get your local, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox stations streamed as well. So it's got the locals, and it's got the, you know, the ESPNs, and what you would typically expect to see on a cable offering is now being offered over the internet. And I thought that was pretty clever product placement, but it goes to one of the things I kind of wanted to talk today about. The quarterly reports were out for the cable TV subscribers, the cord cutters we talk about a lot on the show, and that quarterly report, we're at like a 17-year low now. Another million subscribers have left cable and moved off to something else. And whether or not it's, you know, whether or not people are going to actually save money by going and subscribing to more of these services. Amos, have you tried out any of the VMVPDs?
A little bit.
And
there was a time where I could not. Or where I chose not to have cable at all. I went for like a year and a half where I did the cord cutting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if this falls into the VMVPD. I'm not 100% on that specific definition, but you know, I did the TiVo with some particular programming that came with it, some extra pieces. There was gosh, I don't even remember what they were called anymore. I know YouTube was on there. I know the Crackle, which was one of them that provides free TV, although, to be honest with you, I never saw anything there that was worth taking the time to watch. You know, as we move forward into these pay-for services, which would be like the Slingbox or the ones that are provided by the satellite providers, you know, hopefully the quality increases, especially, you know, Netflix, Amazon Prime and those sort of video delivery services, we're seeing the quality go up. But I think we've talked about this a number of times where now you've got so many places you've got to go to retrieve this feed because you like this particular channel on Sling and you like, you know, which might happen to be one of the big three networks, but you also want to watch Stranger Things, or you might want to watch, you know, something that comes off of Netflix or Amazon Prime or Hulu or whatever. And that's for me, the frustrating part. And it's actually why I went back to cable, was because I had to go to ESPN site for their stuff. I had to go to
they got you. That's what they want. That's what they wanted to make it hard for
CBS. Yeah. I had to, yeah. And it was just difficult. And you couldn't flip through channels. You had to start up new programs or churn on new pieces of hardware. And It was just frustrating. And I think once that is determined, once we have a universal box that makes it easy to do, and there are some that are starting to do that, I think we'll have a better option.
Yeah, skinny services.
It is a bit clunky. Still is, although there are so many out there. We haven't had cable at my house for a couple of years now, and honestly, because there's no commitment, we will, you know, any given month we might use Sling, we might use another one, we might try out YouTube, we just discontinue and start another one if we decide we want to watch this show or that show. It's definitely saved us probably $500 a year just by doing that. And you know, you can use that money, you know, to, you know, buy an entire season of a show you don't have a channel to, if that's exactly what you want to do. So I quite like it. I think Amos is right that kinks have to get worked out, but you just have to look at a chart to tell you that definitely that's the way it's going to go. It's just that, is it going to still be something that, like, consumers want, where you can get just the channels you want, or is it going to be like it is now, where like you want these three channels but only two of them run this service and you got to have this other service, right, which can be kind of annoying.
It's frustrating when even amongst the same provider you go up a package but you lose some of the channels you wanted from the previous package. It isn't all that and more, and then all that and more, and then all that and more, like a you would typically see in a cable or whatever. But they also call them skinny bundles, I guess. These, instead of saying VMVPDs, they just call them skinny bundles. It's easier to say that.
That's a better marketing term
and
anyway.
So Joel is hopping, sort of doing the skinny bundle hopping depending on what he wants to watch. And I've certainly done that depending on the sports season that's out there. But I think they've got a ways to mature, I guess, before we can get to the point where here's the other thing is, you know, when what the industry found was when Netflix and other services started delivering movies to people at a reasonable price over the internet, they found out the piracy went down. The availability was there, and so a lot of the problems they were having with people torrenting movies and things went way, way, way down. And now we're seeing, I just saw a figure, and I couldn't believe it, 6% of North American homes folks might not know what these Kodi boxes are, but it's KODI. They're a way folks get media into their television sets, I guess, from the internet. And 6% of North American homes are set to get, for the Kodi, is set to get access to unlicensed content. So basically pirating television through their Kodi boxes. And I didn't realize it was that high. And I didn't realize that until I heard somebody say, we get the World Series because we go to, and I don't even remember what the service is anymore. It was just something I had never heard of before. And it was obviously not on the up and up. And it sort of got me digging into it, and I didn't realize that there was so much pirate IPTV out there until did a Google search.
During that year and a half that I did the cable cutting, I cannot recall a single show that I wanted to watch, including live sports, that I was not able to find on some service. Some of those honestly were watched over means that if the original producer of that content would have known about it, would have had it shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Reddit is a great place to find just about anything you want to watch and where it's going to be available, and through what service. So you just go out there and say, I'm looking for, in that case, it would have been the World Series or whatever that happens to be, and you'll find a link to YouTube or wherever it happens to be posted.
Like I said, I think once these skinny bundles mature a little bit, they'll hopefully the price may come down a little bit. I still think the $35, it seems to be what everybody's settling into. YouTube's settling into it. DirecTV Now is. Sling's got to get one of their services. I don't know if it's the orange or the blue or the red or whatever the color is that they sell. Their different packages have different price points. But that seems to be where they're settling in. So if you're talking a your high speed cable and one of these, you're back up into the $85 a month kind of an area. And we'll see if that'll cut down on the pirating or not. It seems like in the history that's what's happened is the availability comes up and the price goes down, the pirating kind of goes away. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. Joel, thank you so much for joining us today. Amos, great to have you on board. Don't forget to set those clocks back this weekend, and we'll catch you on the flip side of Veterans Day. Have a great one, everybody.